put here to become wiser in the ways of truth. We are not here to get ourselves into a disaster and then spend the rest of the evolutionary period trying to get out of it. We are here to do things the way they need to be done. And this is very obvious. The great ignorance is, therefore, the willingness to accept false answers to facts. The individual is perfectly willing to be deluded into the belief that the pattern by which he lives and by which he hopes to profit, that this pattern is sacrosanct and he can hope to fulfill it. Now we've got a situation in which nearly everybody is out trying to deceive somebody else. The whole process of business has been corrupted. We no longer think of the barter and exchange methods of the past. All is built upon a very strange but rickety foundation of man's inhumanity to man and man's ultimate selfishness to everything except himself. And to everyone else except himself, he is just one of the victims of the situation. This leaves us with certain uncertainties about how far we've come in this great evolutionary plan. Are we really getting somewhere? Yes, we are getting somewhere. There's no question about it. We're learning, but it's a hard way. It's an individual suffering 100 times more than he should. It's an individual who hurts for ages and generations when he should have had the tooth out in the beginning and let it heal. He's an individual who has been disillusioned until his heart is broken, but he has never been willing to give up the illusions that cause it. He is a good-hearted person who has believed in the brotherhood of man and skinned everyone in sight and been skinned in turn. This is the way the thing has gone. Somewhere along the way, we have lost the contact with the divine. And yet we sit on that contact all the time. This planet is a direct contact with the infinite reality of things. This earth is one of the great books which we are able to read. It is almost a visual, literal, symbolical representative of Holy Writ. It is the same thing. Here in our gardens, in our mountains, in our valleys, we have the law, as the old Indian, American Indians believed. We have the great spirits walking from the peaks of mountains. We have around us all of the realities necessary to our security if we will meditate upon them, consider them, and learn the lessons that they teach. And we have to realize that the voice of God is heard in the winds and in all the voices and sounds of nature. And the voice of a God who is a little disappointed in his creation can be heard also in the confused sounds of the Commonwealth and of the tremendous, intricate organization of man's present communal existence. The roar and howl of cities, the bleat and cry of the suffering, and the incredible sounds made by modern television programs and the like, well, should tell us that something isn't happy. And where we enjoy becoming intoxicated, or would rather take narcotics and die, something is wrong. And a civilization that has come to this is not right, basically, or it wouldn't have gotten here. We are just missing the lesson, and missing it badly. We are perfectly willing, apparently, to have a revolt against society, which we do by some form of eccentricity. We wear our hair longer or our beards longer simply because it is our idea of a revolt against tradition. We have a right to the revolt, there's no question about it, but the length of our hair will not solve it. We'll be just in the same trouble with hair down to our waist or with our head shaven. We're going to be in the same problem until the revolt takes the form of a definite, distinct recognition of the need for re-educating our own lives. Unless we do it, the answer will not come. So we have now come to a point where many people don't think life is even worth living. They're not very much interested in survival. That's why maybe they will keep on being alcoholics until they pass on at a very early age, simply because life is meaningless. For the humanity to have lived for millions of years, to come to the time that the human being doesn't care whether he lives or dies, is not a success. So all this glamour of the skyscrapers, all this glamour of computerization, all the wonderful achievements that we brag about have left us very poor little creatures without any real reason to exist, afraid to live and afraid to die. This is a very sad end of a great program, but it doesn't have to stay this way. It doesn't have to remain a disaster, but the individuals who want it to change must see the need for the kind of change that must take place also within themselves. There is no reason in the world why the inner life of the individual cannot be improved without intruding unnecessarily upon the structure of a society that is opposed to him and is against him. There will always be and always have been good people. There always have been people who are willing to make sacrifice, who would like to do it better. There are parents who would like to have their children better educated. And one of the simple grounds how we can start the whole thing is on the level of education. We are entitled to an education that is inspired by need and not by policy. Children growing up need to be educated in the basics of living. They need to know the difference between the natural ignorance of infancy and the acquired ignorance of the higher educational structure. They need to know that what they are learning will help them to be better human beings and not be satisfied to make them technicians who can command a high salary. We are training everyone today in an economic conflict, combat, and unnecessary situation rather than to educate them to be people. The individual with all the degrees has to go down and die like everybody else. He has, in almost every case, broken homes, delinquent children, great wealth, and still greater miseries. He is perhaps worth billions, but he is tied down to narcotics. He is held bound by alcoholism, or he has one of them of the many disasters which definitely prove the insufficiency of success. The school then should begin to think in terms of basics. The school should perhaps begin with the parents before the children go to school. Maybe every parent should be required at the time of the birth of a child to have some type of basic counseling as to what is important and real in life. Years ago, when I was quite young, I went to a barber who was an immigrant from Italy. He had come over, brought his family and his children, and he was running a barber shop. And we got talking about things of interest, and while he was clipping here and there, we talked about his motives. He had three sons, and his own idea was very simple. He said, "We came over here, clip, clip, in order that I could make these boys rich." Clip, clip. "I'm educating them. I'm sending them to university. They're going to be professional men. They're going to have all the education I never had, and they're going to be successes." Clip, clip, clip. And this was, to him, something that almost everyone would say he was a good man. He was trying very hard, and he was. He was working in this little barber shop day and night to make sure that his younger descendants would have better life than he had. But there was no obvious indication that this was going to happen. And the answer is that probably the father, in spite of his mistaken ideology, was the greatest success in the family because he was trying. He was working hard, struggling hard, to bestow privileges which were in themselves comparatively worthless. So this is what we have. And something has to be done to get back to a proportionate situation. As we look at the map around us, we see an absurd situation in the hands and mishandled by absurd people. We find no basic effort to understand the values of living, no understanding of the possibility of humanity uniting its resources to go somewhere as one solid group, determined to learn, to grow, to live, and to love. Instead of that, all the little frictions. Every person who is strong regarding himself as a slave master and enslaving those beneath him, so that people lose all faith in government, lose all faith in law and order, and gradually come to identify man's made law with universal law. And this, of course, is the ultimate disaster, that the laws of men are merely expressions of the laws of God. If they are, they're misquoted, because deity never did it that way. So we have to find, if we can, some natural way to find that we don't know. Now, how are we going to know that we don't know? Well, one way is to ask a series of basic questions and see if we can answer them ourselves, pass them on to our friends and see if they can answer them. And if these questions are basic, nobody can answer them. So the answer, primary answer, is that we are not yet in a condition or position where we can definitely say that any pattern that we set up is inevitable. We cannot say that we know all there is to know about any subject. We don't know all there is to know about an automobile. We don't know all we need to know about a universal government. We do not know the fullness of anything. Science is still searching and groping for answers that it has been seeking for several hundred years without too much success. Laws are being constantly amended because they don't work. Medicine is in constant revolution between the effort to become more profitable to people and the opposite attitude of being more profitable to themselves. All these things show that after all these years, we haven't gotten where we should have gotten. It doesn't seem possible that the world can suffer for 500 centuries or something of that nature and not find out what causes the suffering. How that always the pattern is the same. Now, if one man succeeded gorgeously and somebody else suffered from exactly the same procedures, it would be more complicated. But it is not that way. Suffering goes right after the heels of mistake, always. And this we have to finally adjust to. So here we are in the end approaching of our century. A century of the greatest material progress the world has ever known. And a century burdened with the most horrible responsibilities and tragedies that the world has ever known. Must we therefore equate and regard as identical progress and misery? Do we have to feel that all progress has to be attended by tragedy? Do we have to think that the more who die on battlefields, the more advanced we become? No, we don't have to. We could learn something along the way. If we were farmers down in deep south 100 years ago, we would have some simple answers to these things. Maybe no one would pay any attention to them, but they would be right answers that we cannot use today because we do not know how. So we have this practice. Are we going to go on fighting a battle that we must lose, and which we are losing every day? Or would it be better to stop for a moment, reconsider, and head in a different direction? I think the answer is beginning to emerge, as it did in the days of the Cro-Magnon and the time when the dinosaurs were swallowed up. There is a continuing pressure now, the recognition growing among people in all parts of the world, that the present situation is not right. That is not something that can be cured by more of the same. Misery cannot be solved by creating more misery. We cannot make peace by continuing to create violence. And all around the world now, there is a tremendous sense arising of the wrongness, the falseness of this concept upon which we have built so relentlessly. We can see it in our investments, we can see it in money, we can see it in theater, drama, literature, art, science, mathematics, and theology. We can see all these things. We can see where the weaknesses are. That we see why an individual can graduate from a university and become within a few weeks a hopeless heroin victim. Education did not prevent him from becoming a drug addict. Another type of education, not quite so recent, he became an alcoholic. Always the education didn't save him. Education apparently wasn't the answer to making the man right, but it should have been. Right? Education should mean that people grow up to learn something about life. Now, some think this is too dull a subject. Nobody wants to do that anymore. They want to watch Dynasty on TV, which, of course, is a highly ennobling experience. If there's anything that should lead to a universal reformation, it is something like Dynasty or Dallas. That really should cause us to realize the mess we're in. But please watch it. And most people are kind of a little jealous that they're not one of the contending characters. But it's still the fact that this is just an aggravated example of a situation which we now call fiction, but is unfortunately more than history. It is something that we should be learning from, and we should learn to outgrow from such things, but we don't do it. But actually, we have to learn, I guess, the hard way. But the way is getting hard enough now so that learning ought to become increasingly popular. We have to, before the end of the present century, begin to get roots down to facts. We have to realize that the answer to the eternal search for knowledge is to find out how the infinite would do it, and do it that way. We should have to try to change place with some universal providence and determine in ourselves how that providence would take care of the delinquent child or the delinquent country or the delinquent race. We have to get back to some type of basic thinking. And there are moves now that are in that direction. Education is breaking loose in many ways from the old stalemate that it was held in. But the intellectual is still the aristocrat, where it should be not that at all. It should be that the intelligent person is the one who is the natural leader. Intelligence is innate. Intellectualism is acquired. And most people are more interested in intellectualism because they get higher salaries. Also, you go further socially by joining with those who make the mistakes. You can get richer, but you can live shorter. And when the end comes, you can be very miserable. So why not some way recognize also religion's place in this? Religion has been very much theology bound. Religion has put too much emphasis on the name of the faith. It has been put too much emphasis upon the sectarian differences which have led in thousands of years to countless wars. There is probably no single greater cause of war than religion. It has caused some of the most miserable and terrible occurrences in the history of the world. And those it has not caused, it has been unable to cure. So that the problem remains that religion as we know it is not working. It is not working in the sense that it is not helping people to grow. Now, when a small child is taken into the temple to be consecrated to his faith, this should not simply be a ritual. This should be a commitment based upon understanding, upon realization of meaning and value. It should be an indoctrination in a higher vision of life's purpose. It should be a consecration to integrities. Now, of course, those who are more or less materialistic in their thinking deny the theological virtues. They do not believe that the righteous must always win and all that type of thing. They feel that that belongs to an earlier superstition. But I think they have one point against them, namely that the critic is not doing as well as the one he criticizes. The critic in this field, the materialist, is in very serious trouble. And it's becoming more and more doubtful that he can continue to sleep in peace as he realizes what his devices are doing to destroy the world. So consequently, the intellectual, the individual who is the sophisticate, who does not believe in such ordinary things as the golden rule, is going to wake up sometime and realize that that rule is going to be here long after he's gone. And it's going to be here, we hope, long after humanity has restored the integrities which he helped to tear down. So we have simple things like that. The golden rule in 50 religions. All nations, all peoples who have had any basic intellectual understanding have accepted that rule. They have found that it was the basis of something that was wiser and stronger and better and deeper than any arguments and dissensions could possibly be. Until man is able to disprove the workings of universal law, he'd better obey it, because the law is not going to be overthrown by any intellectual individual. They say they do not know the law, but we can't find out about the law. But because of the law, little ones come into the world every few minutes all over the world. Because of the law, we hope and we dream. Because of the law, we learn to live and become a little bit useful to ourselves and others. Because of the law, we love and we become fruitful. Because of the law, we love our children. Because of that love and that realization of that law, some of us at least become merciful and compassionate of others. These simple rules are the basis of integrities that are far greater than the Einstein theory. These simple rules are the innate structure, substance, and essence of the creature we call man. They are part of his fabric, and because of them his heart beats. Because of them his blood circulates. Because of them his heart loves. And because of him, his ideals and his thoughts dream of better times. This is a creature. This is not something you can dissect in a laboratory. This is not something that is merely a synthetic creature fashioned out of man's experimentation. This is something that has been endowed with powers and virtues that no living person has fully understood. It is something that we cannot estimate, but we know to be one of the greatest miracles that we will ever face in our daily living. Here is something completely beyond our understanding and completely beyond our skill. And yet it is a manifestation of something that we've all, in one way or another, come to depend on. We all depend on this heart beating. If it doesn't beat, we're in trouble very quickly. We all depend to a large degree upon dreams and hopes, beliefs. We all also depend largely upon physical structure for the attitudes and the practices. Imagine a musician whose nerves did not tie his fingers to his composition. Think of anyone who is in a special precision work. It was not the skill comes from some mysterious working of nerves and muscles in a body we don't understand. Well, man himself is a mystery. We should be rather reluctant to kill him off. While we do not know how he came into existence, we should not contribute to his early departure. We should be working with these things, finding out what makes them, finding out how we can understand them better. If you want to know how to run a country, study the digestive system of the human body, and you'll learn a lot. And you learn things that you cannot go against. If you go against the digestive system of the body, you've got a sick person on your hands. If you go against the digestive system of experience in the world, you have a sick world on your hands. And no cure for that sickness will come until the evil is corrected or the mistake is made right. All around us, there are proofs of a kind of world that we don't want to live in anymore. A world of simple values, of kind-hearted people who would just as soon be nice as be impossible. People who do not expect to and cannot expect to suddenly become wealthy, but who always dream that they might be one who could. And in order to chase this will-o'-the-wisp, they hasten themselves into an early grave. All around us is evidence of life, and it's also evidence that we are destroying life. We are doing things we cannot undo. We cannot replace what we have demolished and destroyed. We cannot restore the forests which we cut down. We cannot restore the species of creatures that have become extinct, largely due to our personal selfishness. We cannot restore anything unless we change our habits, change our ways, and begin to think of ourselves in a proper manner. It's nice, perhaps, to believe that you might become a conqueror over a continent or take on a nation, but think for a moment. Here we are on the earth, which Mark Twain called the molehill. Here is this tiny little planet, somewhere lost in a constellation, the boundaries of which we've never defined, floating in a space that goes on from here to no one knows where. And here we are, greedily determined to own it. We determine that the neighbor shan't own it. We're going to divide up the real estate and make a reasonable or unreasonable profit. And here we fight with our little money bags and all our little thoughts and selfishness and ambition and grandeur complex, while we are about as insignificant as anything in the universe. We are just a small planet, a kind of stupid one, but a kindly one of itself. Someone on another one putting a telescope on us might see some of the mountains or continents, but it certainly will not see successful persons or unsuccessful persons. All this is an infinitude of errors, more and more every day. While we're here, I think the utopians had the best answer. While we're here, let's be comfortable. Let's do it the best we can. Let's free our minds from all this false stuff and take a little of that energy to study our own needs more correctly, instead of sitting by the hour watching imaginary plots on television or something of this nature. Why not spend a little of that time trying to find out how to do things a little better ourselves so that we can help to make a better environment? There's no use being grand, great, and tremendous, ruling over something that is nothing in itself. No matter how many times men conquer the planet will remain unconquerable, and such as it is hardly worth the effort. It's much better to learn to make a beautiful garden out of it, live in it comfortably with your friends, have a few pets that you enjoy, and follow the instincts of your creative hearts and minds and do beautiful things. There's no reason why not. It's not getting anywhere any other way. We will never build enough great machines to express the natural affections and genius that is locked in the hearts of so-called average persons. We will never be able to take this little planet and change it into the ruler of the cosmos any more than we can make any individual the ruler of the planet. He may have ambitions in that direction, but in a few years he sleeps with his forefathers and he is no more. All physical things are transitory. All outward achievements are, at best, relaxations. The real labors, the real work, is to unfold the universal purpose inside of ourselves, the reason why we were created, what we are here to do, and to find out the difference between a native ignorance which says I don't know and goes out and tries to find out, and an acquired ignorance which says there's nothing to learn and I don't care if there is. This type of attitude has got to change if we want to get anything accomplished. Until we can answer the basic questions of life, we are not in a very secure position. A scientist of the 19th century once said there can be no knowledge at all until man knows in himself why he is, what he is, and what his purpose is. All other things are secondary. All other things are of the luxury group. The nature of life itself is pushing us relentlessly to the point where we have to think straight to survive. And that's what is happening now. So instead of resenting this, instead of kicking against the bricks, as Paul said, let us rather go with it and say, if there's something for me to learn, I'll start right now. I'll try to become the person that my inner potential makes possible. And I will try to release through myself universal good as it manifests in me and share it with others. It can be a very quiet and sensitive adjustment. It may not change the course of history in the next few years, but it will change the course of our individual history forever. And we will go out of here with a better hope, and we will go out having justified the divine plan. But when we wake up, and there is another star in the inner heavens, and it's about time that we wake up, because things are getting pretty rough around here. And the sophisticated attitudes of everybody who knows everything, these attitudes are false. This is acquired knowledge, which is no cure to ignorance, but is really one of the great causes of it. Because natural ignorance is simple. It can be cured. But actually, this artificial ignorance, this acquired philosophy that is not so, or the goals of which are not legitimate, or the purposes of which are not within the boundaries of natural law, all this type of so-called knowledge is deceit and conceit, and can bring us nothing but further misery and misfortune. We can take these lessons to ourselves. We don't necessarily force them upon other people. But those who want to think a little better and who have a little better hope for themselves and their own futures and look forward to greater understanding of the universal plan and ability to live according to it will find that in a few very sensitive sessions with themselves, they can find out this cure for natural ignorance. And those who are more sophisticated, who become humbled by the victories of their adversaries, can also become a little more understanding of what they could do to change their destinies. We will all endure what we must endure. As Saint Anthony, I believe, was one who said it. We will endure what we have to endure as best we can in charity and in faith. But that which we can change, we will change by a simple dedication to principles. If we live what we believe, our beliefs will keep us alive. If we do not live according to them, but live in conflict with them, claiming virtues that we will not practice, then we are part of this world of individuals who have been educated above and beyond their capacities, who have taken an attitude that is not true. So let us not acquire further ignorance, but let's get down to basic facts, find out how little we do really know, and do the best to know a little more about it. I think under those conditions, the blessings of heaven will be upon us. That's it.